Hey, this is Glitch. My name is Ahmed underscore H underscore Hassan on Twitter, and you're listening to A Dark Companion.
Hi, this is Zero, and you're listening to A Dark Companion, a Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts podcast. I'm at A Public Witness on Twitter, and I write on the blog at wantstogetout.tumblr.com. This is our fourth episode. We'll be focusing on Chapter 9, and this will be our second episode with a guest. So, guest, introduce yourself.
Hey, how you doing? This is Glitch. You can find me on Twitter. My name on there is Ahmed underscore H underscore Hassan.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining me for this episode.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. So, we're going to be looking at Chapter 9. This chapter is called Something is Coming to Get Me. First impressions of this chapter. What do you think?
It's the first of a series of long chapters. Obviously, a lot of people that watch Dark Hearts, that aren't really aware of what they're expecting or what's going to come up next, they tend to complain about the first eight chapters being so short.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that.
Right, and you know, it gets a little annoying when you're reading through the discussions, trying to look for some actual material as to, you know, what might be happening, or if you're trying to kind of, you know, put your two cents as to what's going on. And most of the discussions, obviously, because you have to pay after, is it chapter 8, I believe?
Yep.
After chapter 8, you have to, I bought this, the season pass, actually, in the very, very beginning, from chapter 1, because I watched Haunting Melissa, so I knew, I was kind of expecting what the format's going to be, and I knew I was going to be really into it.
Yeah, definitely. And for the people that are new to the whole Haunting Melissa concept, that maybe just heard about Dark Hearts, the first eight episodes do a good job of kind of giving you an idea what's going on. But yeah, certainly people that have done it before, like I bought my season pass immediately and just went from there.
Right. And you know, for the people who have seen Haunting Melissa, the first eight episodes are still filled with a lot of they introduced some new storylines in there, and mm-hmm. and you know, as you've already covered with Shakespeare, and you guys did a great job with that, by the way.
Thank you.
I think it was there's a lot there to, there was a lot there to talk about, and you're going to find as we're going on with the story that we're going to be referring back to those first eight constantly.
Oh yeah, because they become even more meaningful the farther you go through.
Right, absolutely.
So even though they're short, there's a lot in there.
Yes, there is. There's definitely a lot in there, and it starts to kind of come together towards the middle of the story. But with chapter 9, I thought it was a great start. You know, it kind of picks up where Haunting Melissa left off, and you know, it starts out with I believe it starts out with Jack, right? Or it starts out with Melissa? Or
yeah.
I'm trying to remember. It starts out with Melissa, and she's she appears to be having some kind of what looks like a daydream. She dreams that she's kind of like running through this field, and then she comes across this old style, like Victorian style house, maybe even a little older than that.
Yeah.
Maybe something out of the French Rococo period, or I'm not really sure with the architectural style, but it's a very old house, very creepy looking, very old. She walks in through the door, and she sees this. What she thinks is her mother,
right.
and so she goes in for this hug, and then she starts to realize something isn't right. And as she's backing away, we see the first glimpse of this. So what do you call her here, Zero? Do you call her the gray lady or the old lady, or?
Yeah. So on the Tumblr, I was referring to her as the gray witch because I couldn't think of anything better than that.
It's actually pretty good.
A lot of people call her grandma.
Right. Yeah, that's another good one.
Which immediately makes you suspicious. Is she Melissa's grandmother. I don't know. But I looked at the IMDb that Brian Kaplan had been working on and talking about a lot in the beginning. And there's a character named Lost Lady, and there's no picture for the actress's IMDb. So I was like, I got to find out who this is. So I started looking into the other things that she's done, and came across the show called Heartland, and she plays a character called Old Biddy. And I just recently posted on Twitter, I don't know if you saw it, a screenshot of her from Haunting Melissa and from Heartland, and pretty sure it's the same person, so I guess her official name is Lost Lady.
No, I missed that post. That's very interesting. So she kind of plays that same character, so to speak, and you know, like the same kind, well, at least the same looking person in other movies and other roles she's done.
Well, not exactly. I mean, this one she's definitely more made up and scarier looking, you know. But I just wanted to be sure who the character in Haunting Melissa is. Right, because it just says Lost Lady, which is kind of an innocuous
vague,
title,
vague.
And I'm like, well, right, you know. So then I started wondering, because we were speculating a lot about whether or not she's, you know, Melissa's grandmother or something. Lost Lady doesn't really tell you anything, but it doesn't necessarily mean she's not very important and probably a big plot point. So hopefully we'll find out something about
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, really, is with a lot of these movies, they'll kind of give the characters, like, a very vague name, so it doesn't give the story away when you're reading the cast list or anything like that. You know, a lot of times you can kind of you know, get what some like an implication or try to get some information about the story, especially if it hasn't been revealed yet by reading the character names. But yeah, I'm so pretty much Lost Lady, we've confirmed, is the Grey Witch, or Melissa's grandma. Some people think it might be, but we're not certain about that yet. Right, so she kind of goes in for this hug, thinking it's her mom, and then she backs off and realizes she's this really scary looking, you know, witch person, and then, you know, and then things start to kind of fall apart really quick. She says, "We need to feed the beast."
Yes, very important line.
It's a very important line, you know. So and that starts a whole line of questions. You know, who is the beast, and why do they need to feed the beast,
and what do you feed the beast?
And what do you feed the beast, and what is Melissa's role in any of this?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. It was very. I mean, it really kind of took the story in a very dramatic direction, and it, you know, things started. It really started picking up for me right around this chapter.
Yeah. I mean, it had the same effect on me that the what chapter was that with? Chapter 8, where we have the little girl getting hidden in the box by her mom and everything. Like, that to me was kind of jarring in a good way, because now we're not seeing the normal settings that we've always seen. We can see that weird stuff is happening somewhere else too.
And, absolutely.
And now we have this new setting with this house. We have this creepy lost old lady. You know, we really want to know what the heck is going on there.
Right. Suddenly the story was a lot bigger than any of us, or bigger than Melissa, or bigger than, I mean, it when you see chapter 8, you know that there's a lot more going on, and it kind of opens a whole Pandora's box of questions.
Yeah.
Same thing with chapter 9, really. You know, what is this old house? Who is this lady, and why does she need Melissa?
Yeah.
I thought it was very, very strange, very, definitely kind of very creepy. Creeped me out a little bit the first time I saw that lady.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did a great job on that. So
yeah, I liked the switch was very smooth between being mom and being her, and the music just stings right in. It's really good.
Absolutely, I got it. And the sound effects are just absolutely amazing. Yeah. Love the sound effects in Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts.
Oh yeah, sound is so crucial. And I watch chapters as often with my eyes open as I do closed, just kind of listening to everything, because there's stuff there too.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, you know, I never actually thought to watch it with my eyes closed. I guess you would pick up more on the subtleties in a lot of what's being whispered and said. I might have to do that sometime.
Yeah, it's shot so well, you get really drawn in visually. So closing your eyes, you can really listen to how things happen, and you can picture what you just watched in your head while you're listening to it without kind of seeing it. And it's very, very interesting.
So after this scene right here, we see Melissa and she wakes up. She's either been dreaming or there was a period of time where, you know, after this event, we don't really know. I mean, they kind of make it seem like it was a dream. But anything's possible at this point. And she wakes up in a warehouse, right?
Right. Just on a wood floor, just laying on her back and looks like she has no idea what's going on.
Exactly. She's very confused, very disoriented. And as the camera kind of zooms out, we see that. Now, I know you've discussed this with Shakespeare before, Zero, but
sure.
We're talking about the perspective here. Who is holding the camera, or is anybody holding the camera? Are we supposed to gather that there's somebody there witnessing this, or is it just, old-fashioned cinematography where they're trying to frame a story? And that's an interesting point.
Yeah, I don't know, because, I mean, it definitely keeps you on your toes about wondering whether or not you're seeing it from the perspective of a person, the way the camera
right.
kind of moves as it zooms in and out. I mean, I'm actually watching that scene right now when she wakes up on the floor.
And right.
It pulls back pretty smooth, which makes me think it's just the camera, but...
Exactly. And I agree with you there. I really think that... from the different creative camera angles in this movie, that we just have to, gather that it's, that there's really nobody there with Melissa from what we can tell. It's just, a way for us to be able to see what's going on with her right now.
Right.
And so we really should ignore, the idea of voyeurism or that there's somebody there watching her or any of this. It's not the same as in the first movie, Haunting Melissa, where it was shot from a found footage perspective.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and this... Well, I mean, it's interesting we're talking about somebody watching her in this scene and whether or not the camera is, because there's a very... One of my favorites, and I'll probably say that a lot on this podcast, that things are my favorite, but it all is good. But there's a DSC in this particular scene.
Yes.
That it just blew me away, and I didn't see it the first bunch of times, and then... That one time, my eyes fell in the right place, but we'll get to that once we get to the end of the scene.
Absolutely.
I just paused it on the camera pulling up, and you got to look around for things in the scene besides just the characters. And I mentioned before, I think I mentioned on the last episode, but Haunting Melissa has a whole bunch of social media accounts. One in particular is the what do you call that? Snapchat. And
Snapchat, yeah.
Yeah, when Nambo Parfo and I were working like crazy trying to figure out this weird alphabet that you see a bit in the movie, when the camera's panning up, there's a kind of a big-sized sheet of paper next to her on the floor, and if you lighten the picture just right, it's one
right.
of those vowel cards they posted on Snapchat. So there's like, they're kind of letting that information out, bits and pieces, and it's right there, and I didn't notice it for a long time because I didn't have anything to refer to, but once I saw that Snapchat, it all made sense.
Right, and we see a lot of that hidden in some of the frames in the movie and also in various scenes, as bedroom posters or wall posters. You get to see this recurring theme of, it's a cryptic kind of maybe alien, if you were, so to speak, alphabet. There's a lot of symbolism in those pictures. A lot of it looks kind of like maybe it could be describing a machine or possibly some kind of geometry or something intrinsic to something calculated. Very calculated is the impression that I got from looking at the symbolism in Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts with respect to the alphabet. And a lot of the imagery in a lot of these chapters. I don't know what you gathered from it, but I know that you, Zero, and a lot of other fans in the community were working really hard to decipher that.
Yeah, it was. There's bits and pieces, and sometimes you would catch some of the symbols with an actual given letter under it. So that would
right,
get you to a certain point.
Yes, the given letters are really a big favorite because, it's pretty much it's just saying, hey, this symbol is this letter, and you can kind of work from there. It made the job a lot easier of deciphering this alphabet.
Yeah, and then once they finally posted that Snapchat, I kind of feel like they were kind of tracking how far we were getting, and then finally, you know, decided, hey, here's something that should help you get the rest of the letters. And
right. Yeah, and I always wondered that. Yeah, so do you think that a lot of the people that you know, like Neil Edelstein and his team were working alongside us to kind of give us a few clues on social media? I know that they posted some things, definitely, but do you think they were actually kind of monitoring our progress and posting things relevant to that?
I think so. I think they are paying very heavy attention to all the conversations that are going on. I mean, the discussion board in the app, and then us on Twitter, there's Facebook discussions going on, because it's really important information for them to kind of see how things are going, how people are interpreting things.
Agreed.
And then also that gives them another level of interactivity, because now they can kind of tailor information they let out based on kind of where, you know, they can take the temperature of the community and see where everybody is.
Right, and I'm willing to bet that it will really heavily influence any sequels or any other productions that that Hook Digital Media makes in the future. You know, they tend to take the pulse of the community, and I know that reading some of the behind the scenes interviews and stuff like that, Neil's team, they actually have some really heavy analytics in these apps, and they're able to kind of see which chapters people watch the most and how often they watch those chapters, and they're able to kind of tailor the movies based on that information. I think that's really fantastic stuff. I mean, they're really changing the way films are made, and they're changing, especially with the horror genre.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, they're the first in this concept. So they're learning stuff like we're learning stuff. They're really figuring out how it all is going to work. So, yeah, I think they're paying a lot of attention and making great use of metrics and looking at what we're talking about.
All right, bring it
back to.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was saying.
Yeah, I was just going to say, bringing it back to the scene in Chapter 9. So what that poster, when you do lighten that up, Zero, what is it? Just a vowel? Like I think it was the letter E or something, wasn't it?
Well, looking at it right now, I'm not looking at my enhanced picture of it, but I can read the symbols now without having to look at the key. Yeah, that is a letter E,
right? Yeah. And that's all that we're given. We're not really given much else. And then the greater scheme of things, you also see there now, I'm not sure if this is a DSC or not. No, it's not. I see it here. There's a key also, and when Melissa first wakes up, you can see there's a key next to her, and I'm not sure if that's important at this point. But we do see a theme with keys and locks a lot in the movie.
Yeah. And opening the door, and I mean all of that, it's definitely relevant. And depending on where you pause it, in the top left corner, just more interesting imagery, there is a white square piece of paper with kind of what looks like a pencil drawing on it.
Yep.
So I figured out what that is. That is
right,
Johannes Kepler's polyhedra. It's kind of a proposed model of the way the planets move, and I guess at some point it was found to be not quite right, but it's interesting that they would have something like that sitting there. It's made me a little suspicious of whether or not this is just ghosts or something else as well.
All right, or maybe a new take on explaining, the spiritual world and ghosts within the context of some, pseudoscientific philosophy, possibly.
Yeah, parallel universes, parallel realities,
right,
that kind of thing.
And that's the stuff that fascinates me too, Zero, is, the idea of, because, for a long time people believed in ghosts and most people believed in all these myths and legends. And then we had the Enlightenment, right? And people thought, okay, that's kind of crazy. It's a little superstitious. Maybe there is no such thing as ghosts. And that's the kind of the mainstream scientific thought is, okay, ghosts don't really exist. But then you start to think about, a lot of these wonderful writers have come back and said, well, wait a minute, there's a lot of science we haven't discovered yet. And what if, some of that could lend credibility to the idea of a spiritual world?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like that's what they're playing with, but it's hard to tell.
Absolutely, my friend.
All right. I'm going to.
Oh, now, did you want to go ahead and set up the next scene for everybody?
Well, yeah. So after she gets up off the floor and she's definitely frazzled, and we can see more of the warehouse kind of stuff everywhere. She's going to make her way out of the room. So this is where we're getting to the dynamic story element in this episode. The one I'm getting right now is, so if you kind of pause it as she's approaching the door, and I'm working on getting pictures built into the podcast somehow, but I'll post some stuff on the Tumblr. There's actually two things going on here, and I only knew about one, and then someone enlightened me to the other. It may have been Natalia over in London. So to the right of the door she's about to walk out of, you may either see what looks like a person sitting on the floor with their arms crossed.
Yes.
Or sometimes you see Melissa.
Something else. Absolutely.
Watching her leave. But on the other side of the door, there's a pole that comes down, and there's, I don't know, maybe a chair. Depending on which version you're watching, it looks like somebody's sitting there with their back to you or not, which is bizarre. I didn't even see that because I was focusing on the other one.
But. Yeah, you know, it's really funny. I actually noticed that some time ago, and I never really had a chance to discuss this with anybody else. So you're the only other person that I've heard mention that. It does look like there's somebody sitting there, and to me, I don't know how it looks like to you, but to me, it looks like they're facing away from the camera,
right?
And you can kind of see a profile, like almost a silhouette of the right side of their head, and you can kind of make out, like, very faintly an outline of an ear, possibly. And to me, I don't know if you're looking at it right now, Zero, but to me it looks like what might be, you know, an arm sticking out, maybe an elbow, and maybe he's got his arms folded inwards, or she does, if it's a woman. I'm not really sure. You can't really tell, you know, or it could also be just, you know, we're looking for patterns in a lot of these images, and it might not be anything.
Yeah, that's the tricky part, is you never know what's real and what's not, and that's another thing I love about this whole thing, is you don't know if you just saw what you saw. You're always asking questions.
Yeah, absolutely, and I love that about these. You know, there's so many subtleties in these movies, and Dark Hearts especially. They really took it up a notch in this movie. That, you know, you're always wondering, did I see something there? You know, or let me go back and rewind that again. And the controls kind of make it easier for you to be able to do that too. I'm really glad they have those frame by frame controls in the movie.
Yeah, that is crucial, because there actually is something to find in between frames.
Absolutely, they really do have a lot of information in here. So, I'm not sure if you mentioned this or not, but it does kind of this is kind of, you know, a little bit of a dark comedy. But they write there's graffiti on that wall right by the person there, and if you got to go back a little bit to when Melissa first starts walking towards the door, and if you pause it and you read it, it says, are you looking at it yet?
Yep, I'm pulling up right now. I got it. Let's see.
It's like really thick graffiti. It's really big letters, and I didn't catch it the first time.
Yeah, it says she. I see she. Is it the blue letters?
Yes, it starts with she. It says she is, and I can read the next one for you. It says,
please,
she is.
Tell us.
She is possessed. It says. You know, I thought it was a little funny when I first read that. You know, it's almost like they're trying to give us a little bit of the story right there by saying something about maybe the person sitting by the door, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, and where she's sitting by the door, there's that big dark figure kind of pointing to the doorway. Yeah, so there's a lot going on in just this, you know, this tiny scene.
Absolutely, like 5 seconds, and you get so much information right there. And so now there's a lot of different things to take from this. What I gathered from it, you know, at this point, is that, you know, Melissa might have been maybe, you know, there's a lot of theories out there. One of them is, you know, okay, maybe there's two Melissas at this point. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a doppelganger. Maybe there's a good Melissa and an evil Melissa, or maybe there's a possessed Melissa and then a Melissa that isn't. What do you think?
Well, I mean, besides the fact that anything is possible, there definitely seems to be a split in her, and it may just be personality-wise, in that there's two Melissas, and there's the scared one, and there's this thing that seems to be trying to overtake her. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that she's sitting there watching herself, and the way that the first Haunting Melissa ended, there's definitely a kind of a light and a dark side. There's two things happening here.
Right. And there's a lot, and you get a lot of that too in Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts, with the, you know, the good and evil or the light and dark, themes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big recurring thing. I'll tell you what I gathered from it, Zero, sure. is I thought maybe, you know, and this is kind of like a wild idea, maybe she is looking at herself in an earlier point in time.
Okay.
You know, and of course, you know, it's really hard to tell from this early on. You can't really, all you can do is just kind of think and maybe say, okay, mate, what if this is the case, and just take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, but, time is an interesting thing with this, because it's easy to forget to consider when this is happening. I mean, you have the where,
right.
You can see the where, but when is it really?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to put a reference as to what time this is. Is this happening before a certain event or after? It's really hard to tell. But to me, it looks like the Melissa that's sitting by the door is kind of in a trance. It seems like she's in a trance. Maybe she's not aware. She's not fully conscious at this point.
Sure.
And to me, the Melissa that's walking out the door, maybe she's not... It seems surreal. She's not really processing all this. Maybe she thinks she's in a dream. But, you know, it could also be that she's just able to walk through time and see herself sitting there at an earlier point in time in the story, or maybe even at a later point in time.
Sure. I mean, you could also argue that what we're seeing here is actually two different time periods overlapped, but not interacting. So she doesn't stop and look and notice herself there. Maybe we're kind of seeing a point in time where she was there sitting on the floor and when she gets up and walks out at the same time.
Absolutely, man. But it's a wonderful scene. It kind of pulls you. It makes you start thinking about the story a lot. And then she steps out.
Right. And actually, I just had a thought. Maybe one Melissa's replaced in the other and the one sitting on the floor is stuck there.
Right. Ooh. Yeah. Maybe she just can't get out of that trance and she stays there and maybe that comes into play later on in the movie.
And the person facing away from the camera is just sitting there watching her. Just keeping her there.
That's a very interesting idea. I hadn't really considered that one
that's
either.
Just popped into my head, and like now.
Yeah,
I'm
and that's what's great about these. I mean, you can watch these 30 times, and on the 31st viewing, you'll have a new idea about what's happening, and I love it.
Oh yeah. So when she steps outside, and this is also where I want to talk about, because I forgot to mention the chapter header, the portal.
Yes.
For chapter 9, we've got Melissa laying on the floor, as we just talked about. And around the circle, we're always looking for things that are kind of stuck to that circle. On the right side, at about 3 o'clock, we've got, looks like to be her mother, kind of pleading and praying. And on the left side, at about, I don't know, 10 o'clock, there's something at first I wasn't sure what it was.
Right.
Then got a closer look at it and realized it's a Volkswagen Bug.
Absolutely, I see it.
And that ties into when she walks out of the warehouse.
Right, I didn't see that at first, and then when I was looking through your Tumblr, Zero, and I saw you said burnt out Volkswagen, it took me like about 30 seconds to really get to see the perspective there.
Right.
But yeah, you're looking at the car from the left side, and you're seeing the front half of it.
Right, and you can't really tell it's burnt out, but I'm kind of hinting there at where you see it in the chapter. When she
right.
walks out of the warehouse, there's that burnt out husk of a Volkswagen.
Yep.
Is that Volkswagen so important that it made it into the portal? Like the chapter?
I don't know.
And it's very interesting. I don't know what the relevance is there.
It is. And you know, you can't really think that, you know, the team that made the movie didn't put that there for a reason. It symbolizes the traumatic events that Melissa went through, you know, that the Volkswagen's burnt out and Melissa herself could be burnt out as well, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe she, you know, she went through a lot after the first movie in between this and this instant.
Maybe that's how she got there.
Yeah, it's possible too. You know, you can never really tell. Although it does look like the car has been sitting there for a long time.
Right.
You know, but we're told, I'm not sure if we're told this earlier on or at this point, but Melissa has been, it's been a month since her disappearance.
Right. She's been gone.
For a month.
Yeah. It's bizarre. So she leaves the warehouse and takes off down the road. And
yep.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of scrolling through my entry on the Tumblr here, and so let's see.
And meanwhile, you get back at the Strogue residence, right?
Right.
And you have Jack sitting there, and it looks like he's been just, you know, digging through a ton of material, you know, like books and maybe old photo albums and movies. And he's got a little TV set up there on maybe the breakfast table or the dining table.
Right.
And he's watching old videos of Catherine.
Right. So, I mean, he's kind of sitting around in this house, kind of just in this mess. And I guess maybe he's trying to figure out what's going on, or maybe he just misses her and wants to watch it. I don't know.
Right. Well, the first thing that strikes me about Jack is it seems like he's very distressed, you know, and we're led to believe that he's distressed about Melissa's disappearance.
Right.
You know, at this early on, you know, you think, okay, you know, he really loves his daughter. We don't really know the circumstances where he was gone the entire first movie. You know, Melissa said that he was away on work but she was obviously not very apologetic for her dad. You know, she thought that her dad was trying to keep some distance between him and her.
Right.
You know, but now he's back and, you know, Melissa's gone and he's watching these old family videos and he's really visually upset.
Right. Yeah. He seems pretty, he's distressed, but I'm trying to figure out where, like what his distress is pointed at. He doesn't seem like, oh man, I really got to find my daughter. He just seems like he knows bad stuff's happening.
Exactly.
He seems helpless about it. Like
that's a major tell there. Yeah, it's a major tell that he's not out looking for her. You know, he's not out looking. I mean, we don't really know. Was he out looking for her for the first 3 weeks and now he's back at home? But it just looks like he's been home for a long time. He's upset, and we don't really know why. We know that he's not out looking for Melissa anymore at this point.
Right.
And he's not really doing much more to find her. He's just kind of wallowing in his misery, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then the creepy stuff starts to happen, right?
Right.
He starts to hear things and see things in the videos, and he's not scared by this, right?
Right. He's just like, what was that? Like, he just needs to figure out what it was. He doesn't really react.
Yeah. Zero, he's just annoyed is what it is. He's not scared. He's annoyed. He's kind of like, he's like, seriously? Like, you're doing this to me now? You know, and he thinks Catherine's behind it. Because he mentions her name a few times. He says, you know, Catherine, it's not my fault. So he obviously thinks that Catherine is behind, the subtle hauntings that are happening to him at this point in the story.
Yeah. And there's some interesting things that happen on that TV screen, especially when it zooms in. There are moments where her face kind of turns into a skull almost.
I don't know what that is. Were you able to make out any discernible detail?
Not really, but I just tapped the frame button and got a very bizarre picture that I'm going to have to post immediately, where she almost completely disappears and looks like she's faceless. I've not seen this before, so I'm definitely going to post that on itwantstogetout.tumblr.com. Like, it almost looked like her outline doesn't even seem like it's her anymore. It almost looks like a young man.
But
one weird thing in the bottom left corner of the TV screen is there's something like almost like a baby's face. But I don't
really
know if that's my eyes playing with me. But I
hold
will
on,
post
I'm
that.
Actually, yeah, I'm there right now. And to me, you know, when I was watching this the first few times, Zero, it looked like, you know, like maybe that Catherine was possessed either at the time this video was made, or perhaps this is happening after the fact. And I think we've seen this video before in Haunting Melissa, haven't we?
Yeah, this is the one that she was kind of pleading and telling Melissa what's going on and how they thought they were doing the right thing.
Right.
Which I so badly want to know what happened in.
Right. So let's talk about it now. Let's talk about what Catherine says in the video, because it's actually it's obviously fairly important.
Right.
I'm trying to remember some of the lines there. Did you post them up on your Tumblr?
Let me check, because I can't remember them either. I might just play the audio right over the podcast.
Yep, I see you have a couple on here. I thought I was right.
Right.
We didn't think it was evil, and that's a recurring thing that she says. I thought I was right, and we didn't think it was evil. So obviously, Catherine and the Maynard House gang, as you call them, you know, they whatever they were doing, they thought it was right. They didn't think they were doing anything wrong, and they didn't think it was evil. Do we know what they were referring to?
Well, I mean, there's just bits and pieces. I know there was reference to somebody that they just say is her, and that they are supposed to get powers like she has by doing whatever ritual they did at the Maynard house. And I haven't seen any evidence of anybody having any particular powers, which makes me kind of wonder what are they even talking about, and who is this person that they're trying to be like?
Right. Well, I have a theory about that, but it doesn't play until later on in the movie with respect to, you know, I know that they mentioned Catherine's sister, Melissa's aunt, mm-hmm. a few times in the first movie, and she's also mentioned again. And obviously we get, you know, later on we do get a little bit of an explanation as to the nature of her character. But, you know, I think it's implied that that there was some kind of, you know, some atrocity committed at the Maynard house involving Melissa's aunt. And we're told that perhaps, you know, Jack and Catherine and a couple of the other characters.
Mike Cole.
Mike Cole. Amanda Maynard was also there. It was her house.
Right.
And you know that they might have done something to Melissa's aunt to and I believe they give us the name Karis. Mm-hmm. Melissa discovers her name is Karis, and it's really odd that, you know, Melissa grew up and had no knowledge of this aunt ever existing, and the town also, you know, it's like they're trying to hide that secret that this person ever existed.
Yeah, something happened that was on such a scale that everybody in town knew about it. And everybody in town has a stake in making sure they don't want to talk about it and keep that thing under wraps.
Right. So we can get a couple of things from that, actually. We can't get much, but what we can understand is that there's some kind of conspiracy involving Melissa's parents, Amanda Maynard, and Mike Cole that involved some kind of something horrible that was done to Melissa's aunt, to Karis,
right.
Catherine's sister. And what we can gather is that maybe there were some kind of deals made to in the cover-up of this incident.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I'd like to know why the math teacher mentioned in the newspaper article in the first Haunting Melissa, why that was even shown to us. What was his involvement, and he ended up with that flesh-eating disease?
No. It could have been that. I mean, well, obviously, I think that the reason he was mentioned, one of the reasons, is it's kind of like a foreshadowing as to what's going to happen again and I don't want to give anything away, but
sure.
You know, you're going to see that again in the next few chapters here. But also, you know, to kind of set up that, okay, the same thing, the same sort of situation that happened to, I believe is his name Berger or Berg?
Yeah, I think Berger, I believe.
Right. To Mr. Berger there. The same kind of thing that happened to Mr. Berger, you know, can still happen to other people in more recent times. And obviously, you know, there's some kind of dark forces at play here that caused this disease. It wasn't some natural circumstance. That's kind of also implied, if
yeah.
you will.
And you see in the first Haunting Melissa, as things are starting to get kind of weird with Mike Cole, he is scratching his face a lot. Like, he looks like he has a rash.
Yes.
So it seems
exactly.
like that's like definitely pointing towards him. So we'll have to see how that whole thing plays out.
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why why Mr. Berg's character was important. I can't remember his first name, Zero. Can you?
I looked it up the other day, and it's totally escaping
right.
me right now.
Right. I mean, in the first movie, and he's a very minor. It's only just a brief mention in a newspaper clipping that Melissa was looking through. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty.
But you know, it remains to be seen if that story has more relevance, bears more relevance further on in Dark Hearts.
All right. His name is Ron Berger. And
okay.
he's the popular math teacher at Harding Middle School.
Right. So he was a popular math teacher, and then obviously he succumbed to some mysterious flesh or skin-eating illness.
Yeah, and it says Winslow residents gathered for, I guess, to mourn him. So, like, Winslow, I wonder where that is in relation to Upton, Kansas.
Not really sure.
Yeah, it's very
interesting. Is it even in the same state? Is it in Kansas?
Well, it doesn't say here. I mean, Upton isn't actually a place. It's
right.
So it's like, I don't know. I have to try to zoom in on this newspaper article, see if I can make out some words.
Right, and obviously, you know, the story when they say Upton, Kansas, they're really referring to just a very small town where everybody knows everybody else, and you know, that's the idea they're trying to convey, is that it's a very small town. Things like maybe a small conspiracy can be covered up in this situation.
Oh yeah,
you know, and that bears relevance just to illustrate the point that, you know, Melissa is from a small town, and her relatives were involved in this incident, that the town officials, maybe the police, we don't really know at this point, might have, you know, had some kind of role in covering this up.
Yeah. So another thing that he hears on that from the TV is, I'm coming for you, Jack, to take you to hell.
Right. And now, do we think this is Catherine that's speaking here, or is it some other, you know, entity?
It's certainly possible that they could be using her image as a way to manipulate him, because, you know, if it was anything else, it doesn't mean as much as his wife, you know, coming after him in that kind of way.
Right. You know, and I got to say, for somebody that's about to that's being told that they're pretty much their demise is very imminent. You know, Jack is taking this a little lightly, I would have to say, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, he's a little freak. He just seems really frustrated about it, not scared of
right.
it, not worried about it, just like, please leave me alone, I'm tired of dealing with this.
Right, which makes me wonder if he's waiting for something to happen, or if he knows that something is in the works that will maybe save him from this.
Yeah, either you that know? Or it's he knows it's inevitable, and he's
given up.
He's just like, you know, quit messing with me. Like, I'm so tired of this.
Right, absolutely. And you know, that's a very good possibility too. And you know, Occam's razor always tells you to take the simpler of two explanations.
Sure.
But there's so much going on in this story, Zero. It's so deep that, you know, you can't really. That's not really a good thing to do. You always kind of have to wander and let your mind drift and think about all these possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, what seems like a simple explanation to us, you know, wouldn't necessarily be the same if we knew more.
Exactly.
So it depends on how informed your simplicity is.
Right.
And so after the door mysteriously opens for Jack, and he kind of flips out, Brandon shows up.
Yes, it seems like he just shows up in the nick of time too. Because I mean, there's like I said, it seemed like something was coming for Jack right there, didn't it? I mean,
in a way, but the fact that it opened the door and then Brandon showed up, it was almost like it was showing him the way, like it knew this was happening.
Right, that's like, possible
you
too.
You might want to come out here because Brandon's coming.
You're right, or maybe it's just messing with him. You know, trying to whatever entity's doing this is trying to really. You know, give Jack a very hard time.
Yeah.
So Brandon shows up and he's obviously, you know, frustrated. Brandon's very frustrated.
Right. He seems more like somebody who wants to find Melissa, but he's, yeah, pretty frustrated.
He feels helpless. I mean, who is he in the grand scheme of everything, right?
Right.
He's, you know, he's just a college kid, can't really do a whole lot at this point. You know, he's finding a lot of dead ends. He's saying, and he tells Jack this, he says, it's almost as though. What does he say exactly here, sir? He says, you know, it's almost like they don't, that she doesn't exist anymore, or they don't, that she never existed or something like that.
Right,
I don't know the exact.
I think that's about right.
Right. So, yeah, he's, you know, he's done with this. He's leaving, and you know, he leaves Jack and says, I'm going back to college. And Jack, you know, gives him this kind of like, you know, he's almost like patronizing him. He tells him what he wants to hear. He says, yeah, you know, Brandon, if I hear something, I'm definitely going to let you know, just to kind of put him at ease. But
yeah,
we're not really sure how sincere that is, right?
Yeah, and, I mean, obviously Brandon really wants to find her, and he kind of wants to look into things, and then something is guiding Jack to go to the door, like almost telling him, like, hey, handle this.
Exactly.
And yep. It just happens to be kind of scary, but it's more like, just deal with this. He's coming right now.
Right. Yeah. And I love the foreshadowing in this movie. And they use a lot of it too. A lot of doors, a lot of, and just the things that they, the little subtle clues as to, you know, things are about to happen. Things are, maybe bad things are coming for Jack. I just love it.
Yeah. They're very good at setting a mood. I mean, the first 8 little mini chapters set, you know, the mood very, very well. And they just do that consistently through every episode.
Right. And then you get the first long chapter like this one, Zero, and you're just like, wow, you know, this is absolutely great. It's almost like you got a reward for putting up with a small 8 chapters before that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a pretty heavy episode.
So then what happens next after Brandon leaves? We're left with Jack, and what does he do?
Yeah, so Jack is going to head upstairs. It's loading right now. So, yeah, he's still... Oh, no, he's not in upstairs. He's grabbing his coat. See how my memory works.
Right.
Yeah, so
he goes for a stroll.
Decides he's going to head out.
Yep. And he makes a visit. Obviously, now, he goes to the graveyard, which, you know, from the walking distance implied, it's very close to the house.
Right.
There's a graveyard. And you and Shakespeare, you know, talked about this a little bit. What is the significance of the graveyard? Is there something more going on there that we don't really know at this point?
It certainly seems like it with the, you know, the chapter with the laughing priest. And the coffin
right.
trying to open.
Oh, I love that one.
I mean, the simple fact that Catherine is buried there, it kind of makes it one of the hubs of all this weird stuff that's going on.
Right. And the rest Catherine of impossible. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and Melissa's, you know, grandparents are also buried there. And, I mean, you know, in the first Haunting Melissa, it was a place for her to go and try to talk to her mom and get some kind of closure. But
right.
there's definitely something going on, especially because it seems like the priest is involved.
Yes, exactly. I know the priest is definitely. I believe they credit him as the Reverend.
And he's
definitely aware of something because he's got this very sinister laugh towards Holly. So he knows more than we do.
Right,
he knows
definitely.
A lot more than we do.
And so much of this involves people dying, and he is directly involved with the cemetery.
Oh,
certainly
so
seems
evil.
To tie in.
It's very wicked. Very wicked laugh. You know, it's supposed to be a very hard time for Holly, but he thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's laughing at her misery. But Jack goes, so let's talk about where we are right now in chapter 9. Jack goes to the graveyard, and he's obviously, he wants to have a talk with Catherine, right? He thinks that maybe Catherine can hear him, and he says, Catherine, it's not my fault.
Right.
So what's not his fault? Is it not his fault, the idea of maybe doing something about her sister or possibly maybe the events that followed after that?
Yeah, is it not his fault what's happening to Melissa and how similar that
right.
is to what happened to her? Or is it not his fault that she went crazy?
Exactly. We're not really sure what he's talking about, but obviously Jack feels that Catherine blames him for something.
Right. And, I mean, he certainly seems like someone who feels like they're being tortured.
Right, and he, I believe that the significance of this scene is that, you know, he's going to talk to Catherine, maybe to put at rest the strange things that are happening to him at home.
Right. Yeah, hoping that
he wants him to stop.
Yeah, calm it down.
Right, so he has this little, you know, heart to heart with Catherine, says, and then he thinks he sees, or maybe he does because we see her too.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa in the distance there.
Yep.
I think she was actually there. It's a little deep, I know, but it goes with the theory that I told you earlier about how maybe Melissa is able to kind of walk through time.
Sure.
Obviously, if she can walk through time, she can be in a couple of different places. You know, as well, she can just kind of, and she doesn't even realize she's doing it. Maybe to her, it seems like a dream, but maybe for a brief instant, she really was there and she saw her dad and her dad saw her.
Yeah. I mean, maybe at, you know, cause she's, you know, that we have that her sitting down in the warehouse and then we have her able to walk out and she seems kind of surprised by her surroundings. Maybe she is kind of in some kind of a parallel place, and there are these moments where she is kind of in phase and out of phase with the reality that her dad is in.
Yes.
So he sees her for a second, and then she can disappear that easily. She may still be there, but the kind of the worlds are bumping against each other.
Yes, absolutely. And it's just, it's very interesting, you know, but obviously Jack looks again and she's not there. So he thinks, you know, his imagination is just playing tricks on him, and he goes back home.
Yep. That's back to the house.
And then after he's back at home and you know, there's a couple of more things that happen to him, in the next few scenes here. Does he hear a sound, or I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, he hears something upstairs and kind of apprehensive decides to actually go up there.
Right. Right. He thinks he hears a sound upstairs in the house and he walks up the stairs. It's a very, very slow walk, almost kind of apprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he's not really sure if he should be investigating this. He's obviously, you know, maybe this isn't his first time dealing with these, these subtle sounds and sights that he's experiencing. You know, he's definitely not. Let's put it this way. Melissa, when similar things were happening to her in the first movie, she was a lot more frightened, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah. She, you know, seemed like anybody would seem in a situation like this.
Exactly, you know, like what you and I would do, probably. You know, we like to think, okay, we're going to be very calm, and you know, we're going to maintain our composure. No, absolutely not. We're going to be, you know, like probably, you know, yelling. There's going to be a lot of yelling, a lot of, you know, quick movement. But Jack is not fazed by this. He's right. Very slow, very, you know, he's very. It's almost like he's just tired of all this stuff.
Right, and when he goes upstairs, he checks Melissa's room, because in the context of, I thought I just saw her, maybe when she disappeared, she actually went home, but doesn't
right.
see her there.
No, she's not there, and then he goes into Catherine's room.
Yes, that's a very cool shot there.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that.
I love this scene, too.
Yeah. I'm just...
Do you want to take this one?
Well, yeah. So I mean, I'm kind of thinking it over, and just the whole look of the room, just that whole mystique of that locked room, and now
it's very dark.
Yeah,
it's
now we're going in and out of this room quite a bit, and yeah, very dark, very solemn, and he, even though you don't see anything, you feel like there's a presence in the room with anybody that's
yes.
there. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's just real heavy. I mean, the stuff on the walls, all of that stuff. And then he goes
yep.
to look out the window, and much to his surprise, he'll see Melissa standing out there.
Right.
But
and
before that...
Yeah, this is one of my favorite ones right here.
Yeah, just before that, he's looking out the window, pretty freaked out, and we get a nice
yeah.
back angle of him and creepy long fingers sliding up his back.
Right, and I know you and Shakespeare covered this, but I mean, man, her fingers are long, aren't they? It's
right.
just, it's so creepy. It's almost like she's not human, really. You know?
Right. It's kind of those long gray alien
right.
fingers. Like, why does she have those? It seems
you
like
know?
A very deliberate decision to give her
right.
really long hands.
And you know, I'm not going to give anything away here, but we've seen other ghosts of dead people in this movie, right? I'm not going to say any names or anything,
sure.
but and they don't have the same thing. Like when we see the ghosts or the apparitions of these people,
mm-hmm.
they don't have long fingers, whereas they had normal fingers in their old image or their alive image. You know, they maintain the same bits, for so to speak, of themselves after
right.
after they become ghosts. So now, does that mean that Karis, or whoever the goth girl is, does that mean she had long fingers when she was alive?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems kind of weird and not likely. Like,
you know, it right. You wouldn't think she would, but you know, maybe she did. Maybe that was her image when she was a real person. And so it kind of contributes to the whole thing of, you know, why did they kill her in the first place? What was so horrible about her that would cause, you know, Melissa's dad, who seems to be an otherwise, you know, good person, to do that?
Yeah, I mean, and if they had to do it because of whatever ritual they had to do to get these powers, like, were the stakes that high that they really wanted to do whatever they did in that house, that they were like, yeah, we could just, you know... sacrifice her and apparently some animals as well. Like, whatever it is, they wanted it that bad.
Exactly. She must have done something very horrible, or you know, something very horrible happened to them to where they decided to go that that drastic. And you know, if you see somebody with these really evil looking hands like that, I would have to imagine that might have been part of the contributing factor. She doesn't look human. She's got these very long fingers, and so they're caressing, right? They're caressing Jack almost.
Yeah, like going right up his back.
Right, and I don't remember who said this, Zero, but somebody on the forum said, you know, it makes you think, was there some kind of relationship between him and Karis when she was alive? I mean, was there like a weird love triangle with him and Karis and Catherine? You know, like, what is the story there? Because it's almost like a loving caress.
Yeah, that's interesting. And just you saying caress made me think of back in the first Haunting Melissa, where there's that shot in her bedroom. She's not in there, but you see Goth Girl's hand or some kind of hand come out from the side of the screen and kind of move around the bed as if it's like petting a large cat.
Yes, and it's like, absolutely.
That's bizarre. And I just had a thought, and you talked about a love triangle, and now I'm thinking, is Melissa her daughter?
It's anything's possible at this point, right?
Oh man,
anything's possible. It's so strange to me, but you know, I love whenever they use Karis's hands in these movies. It's just absolutely ridiculous. You know, they're very creepy looking, and they like to put them in almost in a lot of scenes. It seems like, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, and it's just a great device, and I think there's information they're trying to get across with that, but maybe we just don't know enough yet. There's something definitely going on with hands and also the eye imagery that always comes up, especially surrounding Goth Girl. You know, the chapter portals always have an eye in it when she seems to be involved. And another thing, too, I've been trying to decide, trying to create sides in this story. You've got kind of the regular human-seeming people, Melissa, you know, her dad, Holly, Brandon, that kind of stuff. And then you have these kind of strange, otherworldly people. The lost lady, you know, the Grey Witch.
Yes.
The guy in the hat that comes down the street and switches places with that little girl's mom. You know.
Right.
Who are those people? And they're different from each other. Goth Girl seems to have this wispy, smoky appearance to her.
Right.
The Grey old lady, the lost lady, is just crazy, creepy, gray old lady with a candle.
Oh, I know.
And then
that's a pretty good explanation of a pretty good description there.
Yeah, and then the guy with the hat who seems to be able to just appear from portals in the middle of the street. So it's like they're different from each other.
Nowhere.
They don't seem like they're of the same thing.
I'll tell you what, I read somewhere in one of the forums there, Zero, and somebody described them as the visitors, and I really liked, and I'll tell you why. Because regardless of whether they're spirits from another world or interdimensional beings or aliens or whatever you want to call them, they're in our world visiting, right?
Right.
You know, they're not. It's implied that they're not from this world. That they're just in our world for either brief moments of time or to get certain things done. So I really like that, and it kind of stuck for me. And I've referred to them as the visitors several times because that's what they are, and that really encompasses you know, Karis. It encompasses you know, Fedora the Explorer, as you like to call him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I like that name a lot. And I think somebody else referred to him as Pimp Limp, and that kind of stuck for
me,
too.
Too.
Oh, really? That's fantastic,
just
man.
Names for people, because I can't think of what their names are.
And that's great. That's what we do, really, is we try to kind of label these different characters in a way that we can kind of refer to them in the context of a story. And
right, until
fantastic.
We know something more.
Until we know more, absolutely.
And on the IMDb, you know, Fedora the Explorer actually is referred to as the visitor.
Really?
So he kind of has that name singularly. So that almost seems to separate him from some of the other weird things that we've seen.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying there, and that does make sense. So I mean, maybe it would be a misnomer to use visitors to refer to everybody from that world, so to speak.
I mean, in a way. I mean, because there's, yeah, I don't know.
Right, and we don't even really know how they're related to each other, other than, you know, there are some of the story elements where their paths kind of cross or intertwine. You know, like we don't really know what relationship, for example, Karis has with Pimp Limp. You know, we don't really understand that relationship. Although you do get a little bit of that later on when you see the same characters in the same scenes, right?
Right. It does make you wonder about the connections. And I was just glancing over at the Tumblr. Who do you think owns this mansion? Like, whose house is that? Why is it involved?
I don't know.
It's very strange. Like, I'm trying to think of, really, like, is there anybody that we could connect to them that would make it make sense? And I don't know.
And maybe it doesn't need to, you know, and that's the thing, really, is we're always looking for connections and patterns and things like that. And that's really the way our brains work. Right. I mean, and the people that wrote this story, you know, Neil Edelstein and his team, they know that and they like to play on that, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't remember. I think one of my favorite things that I read about in the discussion forums, and you guys that are, you know, watching the movie will probably run into this quite a bit, is Dead Air Man. I really like him. He's just something else, you know. And he refers to the recurring theme of orange in these movies.
Oh yeah, he's big on that.
Right, and I was reading that, and I'm thinking, you know, what if they just put these orange visuals in there just to kind of mess with him? Because that was a big theory of his in the first movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, yeah.
You know, so it's always fun to think about that, you know, like maybe they're just trying to kind of poke fun at some of us for our wild theories, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can count on Dead Air Man to take a very outside perspective on things and then really flesh it out and look for something.
I love it.
You'll be like, I don't know about that, but then he'll take it all the way to the end to try to figure it out. So,
I love it.
You can never know what's going to be good, what's not.
His posts are some of the most entertaining and the most interesting that I've read. And sometimes, you know, you got to think, you know, maybe he's onto something there. And I'll admit, you know, that a lot of the things that Dead Air Man, you know, thought about, maybe, you know, I've actually contemplated them too. You can't help but think about them because, you know, there's always the big question, right? What if?
Yeah. I mean, I find myself now noticing orange stuff. Like, my eyes just go right to it. I'm like, oh,
absolutely.
That's him right there.
Yep. Me too, all the time. I'll see a glass of orange juice and think maybe it has some big significance in the story.
You never know, it could. You never know.
Going back to, so we're going back to Jack, and he's standing in the room looking down at Melissa, right? He's looking through the window, and Karis has these, you know, she briefly caresses him. Maybe she's taunting him, you know, like looking at it again from a different angle.
Sure.
It looks like he's obviously annoyed by it. He turns around real quick, you know, he's like, what was that? So she might just be messing with him too.
Yeah, I mean, she could even be, if you picture this in more normal circumstances, she's just moving close to him and looking over his shoulder out the window, like looking out with him.
Yes.
But right. Then, of course, he panics, and then she just disappears.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing of it is, if you have to think, if she has any kind of resentment for what he did to her, if it really was in fact true what happened at the Maynard house with the Maynard house gang and you know, the things that Jack and maybe Catherine and Mike Cole and Amanda Maynard did to this girl, you know, maybe she is just messing with him because that's her subtle way of getting back at him for all those things, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So there's always that too. And then obviously he turns around again, looks through the window, and he thinks he sees Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
And so he rushes down the stairs and he storms out the front door and she's not there where she was standing just a second ago. And then he goes, you know, just a little bit further down around the side of the house and lo and behold,
there she is.
And he sees Melissa. Now I love this scene for a couple of reasons. I mean, the first thing is his reaction to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it about Jack's reaction to Melissa that really got your attention? That if you can think of something to describe his reaction, what would you say his reaction was like to you?
Well, I mean, there's the point where he kind of like grabs her shoulders and shakes her. Like, you know, almost in some ways it made me feel like he's almost upset that she's back.
Right.
Like, he's a little like, I'm not expecting this. What are you doing here?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. It's almost as though he's really surprised to see her, and now at the first time, you know, I'm watching this, it seemed pretty much in line with what I would expect his reaction to be for, you know, a dad that misses his daughter. But there's something that he does at the end of that scene that really just it got my attention, and it really just made me think, what is going on here? Mm. And you know, so he first, and I don't want to skip anything here. He says one of the things that really caught my attention, Zero, is he asks Melissa, "How did you get back?"
Right.
Now, you know, and you got to think, is that something that somebody would really be asking somebody that was, you know, if you were that concerned about where your daughter has been, or if you were that concerned about, you know, the fact that your daughter was gone for a month and she just disappeared and nobody could find her and then she suddenly shows up. Is that really what you're going to be asking her?
Yeah, and it's a particularly interesting way to ask that. You know, how did you get back? Like you aren't supposed to be able to get back, or like you know where she was. How did you get back from that?
Exactly. Exactly. It's almost as though he expected her to be gone, and he's asking her, how the heck did she get out of that?
Right.
You know, and you know, it could, obviously, you know, we might be thinking too much into this, but with this movie, you kind of have to do that. Yeah, all exactly. Right. With this, you have to do that with Dark Hearts. It's just the way the movie is. And Haunting Melissa as well.
Yeah.
Maybe even to a greater extent with Haunting Melissa, because really, with the first movie that we had very, very little to go on. And the second one, you know, with as much answers as they're giving you throughout the movie, there's still a ton of questions.
Oh yeah.
So he looks at Melissa and he says, Melissa, you know, how did you get here? How did you get back? And she said, and Melissa, it obviously she has no memory of where she's been for the last month.
Right.
She doesn't remember anything. She says, I don't know. And he even asks her, he says, Melissa, are you okay? And she says, I don't know. She's not sure what happened to her in the last 30 days.
Yeah, I mean, if you consider the kind of the ATM footage from the first Haunting Melissa,
mm-hmm.
where she had a whole different swagger about her. She was clearly overtaken by something. Yeah, of course she doesn't know where she was. She kind of wasn't there.
There's something very interesting too in that footage, Zero, since we're bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
She sort of walks through what looks like a portal that is very similar to the one that Fedora the Explorer walked out of in the chapter with the little girl and with her mom. Her mom almost walked through the same portal that Melissa walked through at the end of that scene. Doesn't it kind of strike you as similar?
Oh yeah, I think there's definitely a correlation, and I wonder about that whole portal concept. So, you know, did that little girl's mom have to walk in so he could walk out? Like, is there an exchange that has to happen, or what?
It's possible. I mean, it's implied that she walked through, possibly, maybe to let him walk out. But it also could be that she went somewhere else in space and time to maybe carry out a mission or some kind of objective or something that she originally intended to do. And, you know, and the fact that the little girl says, you know, oh no, mom, not again, right?
Right?
She says that. So it's not the first time that something like this happened, although maybe this is the last time that she sees her mom.
Yeah,
and it's possible that this is the last time she sees her mom. We don't really know. It could also be that, you know, that it's the first time that something else walked out of that same portal. And it could also be the very first time she saw that happen to her mom. You know, maybe her mom put her in the trunk all those other times and then, you know, would come back for her later on, and she didn't really understand. The little girl didn't understand what was happening to her mom in that time.
Right.
We don't really know. And, you know, and of course we can only just, you know, kind of watch the movie as it progresses and try to figure out, you know, some of the answers to these questions. But what with this scene though, Zero, with the one that we were talking about, where Melissa just kind of does almost like a moonwalk,
mm-hmm.
right? It almost looks like she's moonwalking, like the camera can't really keep up with her movement, right?
Right.
And that really just, to me, I don't know. I mean, maybe I watched a lot of science fiction, But to me, it's almost like she's moving through time. You know, she's going forwards and then she's going backwards. And then all of a sudden she just disappears and she's all the way down at the end of the road. And then she's walking through a portal. So that's how it grabbed me anyway. And I know that there's a lot of different opinions about it. And I'm sure that, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinions. And you know, maybe they might be right and I might be wrong. But to me, it just grabs me as Melissa is walking through time. And the camera is filming things with our reference point, with how we would see Melissa walking through time.
Right. I mean, I that's exactly why I wanted to do this podcast, and that's why I like to have guests from the whole Hooked Digital community, because, you know, I don't want it to just be my theories, because I'm only going to hit certain things. There's things I'm not going to see, and we talk so much on Twitter. It's like, let's get this out there so that other people can listen to it and they can come on the show and get involved as well.
Oh, and it's fantastic. And I tell you what, I mean, as much as I'm enjoying doing this interview with you, I think I enjoy listening to other people come on and talk with you about the story even more, because I learn a lot and I see a lot of, and I hear a lot of different theories and perspectives on the story. And it just really makes me, you know, think about some things that I hadn't considered before, just like you said. So it's wonderful. And I really, I'm very excited about, you know, some of the other guests you might have come on in the future.
Yeah. I think I have one, set up for this coming weekend. So chapter 10 will be coming very soon.
That's fantastic, man. I think you're doing them at a pretty good rate too. I have to say, I mean, it was only, when was the Shakespeare interview? Was that like 3 days ago?
That may have been maybe a day or two ago, something like that. Like it was pretty recent. So.
It was very recent. So, I mean, you're actually, I like the rate at which you're doing these podcasts, because, you know, just when you think that you've listened to everything and you've read everything that there is to read and you've looked at all the Twitter posts, then I see that there's a new episode for A Dark Companion, and I'm like, okay, there's more stuff that I can digest here, and it's just fantastic.
Oh yeah, I'm loving finding out stuff I didn't know about, because yeah, you do after a while feel like, okay, I've watched this episode to death, I know everything that goes on, and then someone lets you know just one little thing and it changes your perspective. And you know, you wrote a very elaborate theory on the discussion boards, and so I would definitely like to have you back when we can get into more of those expanded details.
That sounds great.
Have you kind of explain that, and who knows, between now and then, you may have picked up some new information that you add to it.
I'm sure I will. I'm certain I will. And Zero, before we wrap this up, there is one thing I wanted to mention about the very end of this episode.
Oh, please do.
I don't know if you see it too, but you know, and I actually didn't spot it at first. My wife pointed out to me. She saw Jack's face at the very end here when he's hugging Melissa very close, and the camera is on Jack's face, and she said he's smirking. And I look at it now, and I can see it. It almost looks as though, you know, Melissa, and right before this moment, you know, Melissa says, "Dad, I think someone is coming to get me, and really soon." And it's almost as though that puts him at ease that this is happening. He feels better about that.
Ooh,
in a very sadistic kind of way.
I just saw it, and
yeah,
his eyes look up and look out. Like, there's a lot going on in his head right there.
There is a lot going on right there. And I wasn't sure if you caught it. I missed it the first few times I watched it. Yeah, and my wife, Crystal, she pointed it out to me just a couple days ago, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Also, not to mention, if you start to watch this chapter again, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will. They'll go back and watch this chapter again, especially if they're waiting for the next chapter to unlock. Mm-hmm. They're going to watch it from the context of Jack with this sinister, you know, maybe ulterior motive, right?
Yeah, because now you want to go back and rewatch the whole episode thinking about that face. And he was just kind of that 1,000-yard stare he had, like he's considering something.
Right, and if you watch it from that perspective, you're going to pull so much more out of it, and that's why it's. I think it's absolutely brilliant what Neil Edelstein did with this this release schedule, because it gives, you know, it forces you to go back and watch some of the story over again in order to kind of let your mind wander about what might be happening.
Yeah, because there's more to consider than just watching through it once. I mean, there's a lot going on.
There is so much going on. It's more than what you can get at face value, right?
Yeah. Definitely. Whew. Well, that was excellent. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me.
And yeah, definitely want to get you back again to talk about your theory, because it is pretty elaborate and I want to go into all that detail.
I would love to. It's wonderful, and I think you're doing something great here.
Thank you very much. Well, you have a great day, and happy holidays, since we're recording this on Christmas Eve.
So, happy holidays to you too, my friend, and everybody else out there that might be listening as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Zero, you have a good one.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.